Recorded in Seattle, Washington. It's an earful in the Emerald City.
Hold on to your butt.
Where local and national gossip is twisted with comedy. Starring two typical guys who hold nothing back.
What the hell is so great about that?
To make your jaw sore.
Oh, that's nasty.
Get your mind out of the gutter and give it up.
Because they want to go out somewhere, right?
I think there's also a thing in our brains where, like, I've thought this, like, every time a girl is, like, willing to, like, date me or fuck me, I'm, like, a little less attracted by, like, to them. Because I'm just like, you're going to fuck this?
Like, yeah, you're like, man, there's got to be something wrong with this chick. Like,
yeah.
If she thinks I'm worthy?
Yeah. Like, you're right, that is a...
Has she seen my car?
Yeah, is there something wrong? Like, is she, something's clearly wrong. Is she going to stab me and take my
kidney? Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's
right.
That's just low self-esteem at its finest
right
there.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
you know?
That's
but
very true.
If you can manage that, it can work for you at times. Yeah. It can potentially work for you at times.
You mean build confidence because that's what they look for?
Yeah, and for me, like, I think I'm just going to see what it's like. I'm out doing stand-up every night.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's a better way to work your way into conversation
really
than
is.
Anything else.
Yeah.
Especially, like, I'm going up last.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'm the last person that is speaking to you.
Right.
Like, maybe that'll like end up with us kissing at the end of the night or whatever.
Yeah. it's just something to start a conversation. You know, it's like, even if you crush it, she's just going to come over and she'll be like, hey, you did really good. I just want to let you know. And then boom, right there, you're already gone.
Just don't be creepy.
You know? Like, I actually had a chick buy me a drink recently, and I was
nice.
Like, and it was funny because it was a set that I thought, like, it went okay, but I didn't feel like it was my best, you know? And then she, like, just comes by. I'm like, do you work here? What the fuck? And then she goes and sits down, and I was like, oh, wait, never mind.
You had all those low self-esteem thoughts. Like, did she roofie? Is this a trick?
Well, yeah. I literally thought, is she working here? Like, no, I didn't order another beer. Like, I was almost going to, excuse me, miss. No, I was just going to have the one beer and then leave.
Oh, she
Sorry.
Just dropped a beer on you?
I got off stage, and she was ordering while I was on stage.
Where
and
was
then,
this?
This was up at Tony V's up in Everett.
Oh, okay.
And then, yeah, she just came in as I finished and she dropped off a beer and I was like, I didn't understand what was going on at first, you know?
And,
I was
and
like,
then what happened? Well,
I was like, and then I finally dawned on me, especially since she's hanging out with other guys, and I was like, oh, that was a compliment. Oh, okay. All right. That's what that feels
her?
Like. Yeah, I chatted with her a little bit.
Okay.
She was crazy.
quality.
But it was the thought that counts, you know?
Yeah.
It's the thought that counts.
Was she, like, was she attractive?
She wasn't bad. Yeah, she definitely wasn't bad.
That makes
but,
her less creepy.
It always helps. Yeah,
that's
helps.
The difference between creepy and not creepy
yep.
is that you're attracted to the person.
Yeah,
a lot of times it's out of your control.
It's like, oh, this
it's
guy's
out of your control.
Yeah, like, well, I guess what's in your control is that you can stop like pursuing it.
Yes,
that's the main thing. Like, if my ex girlfriend wasn't attracted to me for the last 3 years, I would have just been her longest stalker, like most successful stalker,
living stalker.
Yeah, it's like we share the same bed. Like she doesn't even notice.
Oh, shit. That's
funny. I'm trying to think of, was it Gwyneth Paltrow? Who's the one that had the stalker was living in their house when they didn't realize it? That's the scenario you basically had going on.
Is that a movie or a real
no,
life?
No, like one of those celebrities, I think it was Gwyneth Paltrow. She had the celebrity who broke into their house, but she didn't realize they were living in the house. They were like in different parts of the house. That's when you know your house is too goddamn big.
Yeah.
They didn't realize they were in the house until I think it was like a week and a half. Like they were, like stuff started being weird, and so then she had to call the police, and then like they found the person was in the house. It was like some, I think it was a woman.
Yeah, it usually is. Yeah,
yeah.
I saw one on an internet video. This guy, shit was moving in his house. You know, things were being eaten and taken, and he didn't know what the fuck was going on. He like lived in a condo. He ends up setting up a camera, and it turns out there's a girl. There's like this little Asian lady who's living above his pantry. And he doesn't even know that she's
what?
There. And she comes out at night and eats food and stuff. And one time he came down and she like had to hide. Like you see in the video, and she like had to hide in the corner. Oh man, it was.
Oh my God. What?
Yeah. It was so crazy. And like the light goes out and she like opens the pantry door and then she like creeps out from like the ceiling.
And she's just using like her cell phone light to maneuver through.
Who fucking knows,
I don't know.
Man? Who, it's insanity though. Somebody
look,
could be hiding amongst your. I mean, not my house.
Right.
My house is plenty small, so I don't have to worry about that.
I'm just saying. Yeah. Good job on your stalker abilities there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
It was impressive. He's like, she'll never notice me.
That's another thing too. Is ghosts. You know, when you live in a small place, I feel like you don't have to worry about ghosts, you know? Like, ghosts, if you're going to haunt somewhere, at least haunt somewhere with some square footage, you know? Yeah. Like, it's going to be awkward if I just had to see you in the corner over there while I'm hanging out. Like, so what's up, Gary? You know, I mean, you're kind of looking at me weird. What's the deal, man? You know?
Just take a seat.
I'm not tired yet, all right? I'm not going to bed. Yeah. I'm not going to bed. 7:30.
Yeah, I know you want to walk around in the kitchen and I can see you from my, yeah, you're right. Good point.
I have friends that have, like, bought, like, huge houses, like $1 million homes, and I was like, why do you need all these rooms? It's just like it's a gay couple, like they might have kids,
gay couple,
but they, like, of course it's a gay couple. Yeah, they're like the wealthiest people.
Yeah, they do really well.
Like, but it's two people living in like a 6-bedroom house. I'm like, yeah, you're gonna make a gym and like all this other shit, but like, are you really gonna use it? Why are you?
Oh, they might use the gym, to be fair.
Yeah, they probably will, yeah, but...
Then all these guest rooms that are just going to collect dust.
Yeah,
like,
what are you guys going to turn into Brad and Angelina?
Their family comes and visits them
when the
holidays come around if their family is accepting of their relationship.
Yeah, that's true. We want to be available for everybody, you know?
They like Ghost.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We got to set this thing off proper, like, so make sure everybody knows what's going on here. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of An Earful... in the Emerald City. You guys are joining us right now, and God damn it, we appreciate it. You guys, good that you're here on this post-Christmas day. You know, I think this might be one of the saddest days of the year. I honestly think, you know, especially with the weather around here. You're 364 days away from Christmas. I mean,
not where I thought you were going.
No, well, I mean, it's the weather usually that gets me around here, to be honest. Okay. Like last year, it was dark, rainy this time of year. You know, it's like if they didn't throw those parties in, some of us might not have made it.
I always feel that pre-Christmas is sadder.
You think so?
Because it's especially like when you're not in a relationship, it's like, it's a family holiday, and I don't have like kids that I get that I'm like making happy.
Yeah.
Like none of that. That's where like it feels sad. Hmm. Like right now, like it's a Monday.
Yeah.
And then on Sunday or like Saturday night, who knows? Maybe I'll kiss a girl at midnight. Like there's like New Year's is a hopeful holiday.
That's true.
For single people.
That's true.
The lead up.
It is kind of the family thing definitely changes the angle to it. So, all right, you're relieved then. Hey, good for you. Yeah. But, thank you guys for joining us. Speaking of which, make sure we give them a proper introduction here. We got one of Seattle's finest local comedians. He's been featuring all over the city, including places like Laughs and some other spots down in Seattle, too. The very funny... Mr. Wilfred Padua joining us, you guys. Wilfred Padua on the show.
Thanks
for being here, man. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
I've been saying it for years.
It's a big get for us. I'm not going to lie, Marcus. It's a big get. We've been trying for a while. Yeah, yeah. No, you got some... You know what you're talking about. You know, you've been around in the scene long enough.
You make me laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, to toot your own horn here for you a little bit, you've been a fan favorite as far as my friends go. You know, I've had a decent amount of friends make it out for shows, and you're definitely a name that everybody always approves of, so...
I do what I can.
Yeah, well,
and sometimes it works.
It shows. So does that sweater. It's a good look, man. Yeah, way to go.
It's very warm.
Yeah, no, so we got a little Christmas wrap-up here for you. I hope you guys' holiday went well. Hope you guys got what you wanted.
Did you watch any Christmas movies?
I did not, actually.
That's why you felt sad leading up to Christmas.
Yeah. Like, well, I've been watching, like, scary stuff, like ghosts and, like, poltergeists and stuff. Like, it's kind of fun to get scared sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it makes you feel vulnerable, and it's kind of a good thing, you know?
Don't you watch, like, Nightmare Before Christmas?
No, I just watch, like, creepy videos and stuff on the internet.
He went totally...
He's, like, on 4chan.
Yeah.
Some poltergeist
on the
shit,
weird
you
part
know?
Of YouTube.
Some poltergeist shit. You see fucking knives and shit flying all around the room. Uh-huh. No one's around.
I watched a Christmas Horror Story. That was a weird movie where it was Santa versus Krampus.
Oh, Jesus.
It was actually pretty good. It was a pretty good movie.
I feel like Krampus would easily win that shit.
It had the origin of Krampus in the film, and it had three stories happening simultaneously, and it ended with the battle. It was awesome. I was actually impressed.
Huh. Jeez. You got to think that Santa has some magic powers.
He did.
I mean, yeah.
It was awesome. They both had magic. It was sweet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a
magic
good movie.
Versus magic. Well, if it's magic versus magic, then I feel like Krumpet is
what's
much more
Santa's
athletic.
What's Santa's magic powers? Are? He can slim himself down to fit down a chimney.
He's got
that's
that
like...
staff.
He has the wizard staff? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well,
They're he's upgrading. Also got like 1,000 people working for him. So
yeah, that's
he's
true.
Got like an army sweatshop. Of tiny people.
Yeah. I don't want to ruin the plot of the movie, but those people that worked for him became zombies.
Oh, Jesus.
Dude, the movie was, it was like, all right, I don't hate this film at all. I don't know what's going on, but this is our.
They're at least embracing it.
Yeah, they went full bore stupid, yeah, but
that's what you got to do. Yeah, this is 2016, though. Just like that, you guys. This has been a.
George Michael.
Definitely. Oh, my God. I know. Another one. Yeah. I feel like we got time for one more here, too, to be honest.
Oh, we still, have, time.
We still have.
We have time.
We yeah. have a week for another legend
this,
to die.
God, this has just
Who's
been.
Left?
Stevie Wonder's around.
I'm worried about Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, he's not.
That's who you're
either.
Worried about?
Yeah. I am. He's old. He's very important to
I
the
don't,
sexual
I,
revolution.
Hugh Hefner is not on the level of, like, George Michael, David Bowie. Like,
yeah, definitely not.
Like,
literally started the sexual revolution.
That's true, but Playboy, yeah. it's not even around anymore, though.
No, it's around. It's just different.
It's not.
I think bra burning started the sexual revolution, I think.
He was a part of that.
Yeah, that's true. He was. Well, he's probably just telling him to take him off.
Yeah,
do whatever you
actually,
want with that
yeah.
at that point.
That's right.
Sure, burn
yeah,
them with
yeah,
just
yeah,
as long as they're
on,
not
yeah.
on your chest.
Yeah, you want, let me take a little picture. So
yeah.
yeah,
do whatever
you
want.
You want to be a centerfold? Yeah, all right. Go.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's it's been a fucking gut punch of a year, though. That's for sure. The names are crazy.
Who's your Deadpool?
I was going to say this till the end, but since you guys are already gone, I got to say Muhammad Ali.
Oh, that was one
I think he was the biggest one. Yeah, just because he was iconic, you know? Yeah. Like, everybody knew who he was. And people didn't like him. People liked him, but you fucking knew what was going on, and you had an opinion at least, so.
Mine was Fife from Tribe
Fife
Called
does.
Quest.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Because Tribe Called Quest had a, like, of all the people that died, his was the one that I was the most connected to.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, was it diabetes? Was it complications from diabetes,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. But yeah, that was, I mean, but it's also like,
one.
It's also like someone that I've never met and never even got close to meeting died. So
yeah.
It's like,
well, that's the weird thing about all the death is that there are some people now getting upset that the jokes happened with George Michael recently. And I was like, well, what the, and then there are people in the comments going like, it's not appropriate, blah, blah, blah. And then people were like, well, why are you turning it into 2016's fault? And I was like, it's not the fact that there are deaths and they never happen. It's who died this year.
Yeah,
it's the influential. There was a lot of influential people. Prince died, and everyone was like, "Oh, well, there goes my music catalog for like a week."
Yeah,
I don't even know who was my biggest one. It was lots of sports people. Yeah.
Everybody just
Allen.
Loves those raspberry berets so much, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't wear mine for a week.
It's like this is real moving stuff, Prince.
That's well, I mean, everything purple. I had to put it up in my closet, and I was like, I can't wear this for a little bit. It'll get too
purple's
too
been
soon.
The purple's been the color forever.
Yeah, too
okay.
soon.
It's been the color of royalty forever. Yeah. That shit's been going back hundreds of years.
Gene Wilder.
Don't be surprised by anything they were doing.
Gene
hundreds
Wilder's
of years
another,
ago.
Yeah, that was another death that like that. Yeah, it's just like it's huge deaths, but
I don't kind know. Of diverse group too. Actually, yeah. now that you think about it, mm-hmm. you know, they got kind of got every somebody.
I think everyone
every
got touched
yep.
by a death
yeah.
this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, definitely. There was young what's his face from Star Trek, got killed by his car. Anton Yelchin.
Oh.
His car ran into him.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's
don't
right.
even know that one.
He played the little Russian guy in the Star Trek films.
Yeah, but Star Trek was never a thing that I cared about.
Oh, well, he's like a little, he's a young actor, and he got killed by his Jeep, not engaging. Mm-hmm. And that's when Jeep was like, oh, someone else got killed by our car. We got to recall those because it's celebrity now. Like, yeah, we told you. We told you months ago.
People are actually talking about it.
Yeah, we told you months ago. Your car is not
when
engaging.
When Kevin got killed, it didn't matter. But
Anton Yelchin. Yelchin was like, ah. Tommy from Martin hurt me. That There we go. I found mine.
Tommy from Martin the TV show?
Yeah. He died.
Which one's
Tommy? Is that his buddy?
The bald guy. Tommy,
oh,
you ain't
yeah,
got
yeah,
no
yeah.
job.
Yeah,
yeah, he
yeah.
died.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, like, that was probably something that I should have known about, but because I, like,
there's
everyone
so
else.
There's so many, though.
Yeah, everyone's dying at such a high rate, and also, like, all these people are, like, have real credits.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Martin's a good credit, but it's like.
Well, it was just because that was, like, my
like,
favorite
man.
Show growing up, where
yeah.
it was like, that's like
yeah.
someone from Friends dying for most white people.
Yeah, but you weren't in Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein, man.
No,
yeah.
it was more so Willy Wonka. That's
yeah.
why Julio and Gene
Blazing
Wilder
Saddles.
And all the stuff he did with.
That's a movie
Blazing
they can't
Zone.
Even make. They can't even make that movie again.
No, you can't
there's
make
no
it.
Way.
You
can't.
There's
no.
Absolutely not.
Well,
the
I've
fire.
Actually, you know what? I've been watching Cheers. Mm-hmm. Because I never got it when I was a kid.
Yep.
And then I started it over like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't make that TV show. And it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's the bar stuff?
I think it's just like, they're just filming a play that's being acted out for you. Like, and like that's not entertaining enough anymore. And Like, did you guys see Horace and Pete, the Louis C.K.
thing? I saw the two episodes.
It's like, it's too slow. Like, it, I think it's great. I watched the whole thing, mm-hmm. but it's like too slow to be like modern entertainment. And I think like that's what's going on with Cheers, and like the way that they brush along. Like, Cheers is just, it's a comedy, yep. but they do a great job of like talking about issues, and no one comes off as a good guy. No one comes off as a bad guy. Like, it's, yeah. it's brilliant in the way that it sits in the gray area and just yeah. kind of brings up stuff. It does what comedy is supposed to do. It's yeah. not supposed to me, it's not supposed to give you an answer. It's supposed to just bring up stuff for you to fucking think about later.
Yeah.
Good point. I think the closest to Cheers we have now, but it's totally the other end of the spectrum, is Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Like, yeah, I never play set in the bar.
Yeah.
But the That's people true. Are, you're not supposed to like the people.
Yeah. But
right.
you do.
Right. And in Cheers was, I like people in that bar. It yeah. was, it was your neighborhood bar.
Yeah. yeah. And there is something familiar, like the fact that it's like familiar characters. It does exactly what the bar would have done.
Right.
Yeah. Well, like you said, everybody's kind of on an even footing too. You know, it's like everybody just plays their part and they're yeah. one of the regular people that are there. So,
including Frasier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's yeah. always... I just started catching up to the episodes where he got introduced.
Okay, as a character.
Yeah.
Right. And you go like, oh, I have this. Was he still like a psychiatrist or whatever the hell on yeah. that show? Like, yeah, he's still a guy who goes to this neighborhood bar with a mailman. And you're like, oh, it's just a bunch of people just coming around drinks. And that's weird that we brought up the Cheers thing, because there was a thing talking about men. Usually we only get into groups and talk with other men about topics that are generally not okay. Our locker rooms are usually bars. Hmm. And yeah, like that's usually when guys open up, is when we're in a drinking setting more so than women as far as
what's getting their to, setting.
I would say hair salons.
Yeah. Tupperware yeah, I don't parties. Know. I don't like, because I don't drink, so I don't have like that. But I feel like I'm forcing myself into those conversations.
Yeah, as a black person, I go into barbershops.
Yeah,
that's where we just talk about sports and some other stuff. Dude, like, oh, did you break up with your girl? And you're like, ah, you know, we're just cracking jokes on the dude. But then, you know.
Yeah, but it's also like, I'm like, my job, like as a comedian, I feel like I need to be saying this shit anyway. So it's just like, let's just, it feels so good to have real conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That like, oh, I do that shit on stage. Let's just keep this fucking flow of heroin going, and like surround myself with people that I can talk with.
Right. Openly. Yeah. And not worry. Well, you shouldn't worry about being judged. But then again, there are some people who yeah. can't take the conversation at face value.
Yeah. But I think it takes like a lot of, like, it takes a real friendship to have those conversations with people where you're like, yeah, it's okay to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, let's.
Yeah. When you know, you can just be open, you know, and you can say maybe some kind of kooky or crazy shit and they're not going to lose their fucking mind, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's so frustrating. Just like having to filter what you say to people because of what they can handle and what you think they can't handle. Yeah. You know, it's like, I mean, I'm not going to try to be just an asshole for no reason, but yeah. maybe there's something I'm going to say that's going to upset you a little bit.
Yeah. But I think that's like to go back to that, like, oh yeah, I just saying I am kind of a misogynist, or mm-hmm. I am sexist, or I'm racist, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, if you're going to shit on me for what I'm going to say after, it's like, well, I did warn you.
Right.
Like, I did tell you, like, this is who I am. Cause I, yeah. and I'm saying that not to be an asshole, but to be myself.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
to be honest.
Do you feel like that's easier to do with, I don't know how, if you guys have kept up with lots of high school friends where it's like people who've known you from a long time ago or whatever, where you don't have to clear out that you're going to say, cause like, yeah, it's just the, you know,
I don't, I feel like, I've changed so much since high school that like there's a lot of like getting together with old friends is like rehashing old memories, and like it just feels awkward because I'm gonna fulfill your expectations of who you expect me to be or who you like think I'm gonna be in this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just more comfortable with my friends that I've made in the last few years, because I like, it took comedy and like just being an adult for a few years to really come into myself. So the people that I'm comfortable with are the people that I've been honest with, like, and have been in the room with me while I've been saying crazy shit on stage.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I only bring that up because I feel like, I think women are better at keeping their friends from high school. Like, they're better at posseing up or clicking and mm-hmm. staying friends with people from their past better than men are. Mm-hmm. And then we're trying to go out and find another circle of friends to do, like, I think that's the male privilege, is our hunter-gathering kicking in. We're like, I gotta hunt for friendship. We're kind of, it's easier for women, even though, as much as we're like, you know, women know other women and they don't like each other, sort of joke goes around, but I'm still like, yeah, but they still can communicate better than, I don't know. I was thinking about the guy suicide thing like, for a while, and I was guys kill themselves more than women, like, we are, like, by a lot. And I was like, is it because we don't have a good outlet for ourselves? Like, is, like,
I think there's also and I've talked about this with, like, certain people, like, there, it's the pressure of having to be everything. Like, when you, like, just because of the way that, like, standards and expectations have been set on, like, men and women,
mm-hmm.
like, the idea that as a guy I'm supposed to be, like, the breadwinner, the person who, like, and then also expectations are changing, so I've got to, like, also help out at the house.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to be interesting because my looks aren't good enough. Like, there's so much shit that, that pressure that's put on a person that, like, you're going to break down if you succumb to it.
Yeah.
Because, and that's, like, I think that's why suicide rates are higher with guys, is because there's, like, you feel worthless.
Yeah. We're probably not as good at coping, you know, with the sad times a lot of times.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah,
we just fucking out. And sometimes that shit can just spiral out of control, you know, and then you just make one stupid mistake and that's it, you know.
Yeah.
But like, to come back to the friends thing though, I wanted to touch on this real quick, just because I feel like I'm an outlier because I actually do hang out with a lot of people from high school still.
Okay.
You know, like, I have probably I'd say 8 to 12 people that I went to high school with that I'm still seeing, you know, maybe once a month, somewhere around that kind of frequency. A lot of them have, yeah. So that's kind of made things a little tricky. But yeah. I think for me, it's just like when I was in high school, I was always that kid that, you know, I guess a lot of kids probably were, but, you know, I tried as little as possible and still got by with a B- average, you know, did all right, didn't do great. Whatever, just did my thing. And so I don't think a lot of people ever expected too much from me, to be honest. So I feel like, you know, it's just good to look back to those people that you've known for a while, and it's like, yeah, you change and you grow up, but to a certain extent you were, some of that concrete had already dried when you were 18, 19 years old, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're always changing a little bit, but you still have kind of that same identity too. But
yeah, I think if you've been, like, seeing your friends regularly, like, they're seeing how you're changing.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, I've been through so many different phases of my life that, mm-hmm. like, now that I'm in comedy, like, I'm not seeing any of the people from, like, college or from, like, any my past lives.
Yeah.
So it's like, so the way that they, like, them arriving in my life all of a sudden, would they'd meet a different person.
Yeah, that's true.
They
might not even know.
Exactly. That's the same with, yeah. I have the same sort of feeling where it's like they show back up. It kind of stresses me out because I'm like, do I go back to what they think? Like you said, like, I don't even consider it. But then you're like, but do they do this new thing and you're not sure how it's going to be taken?
It's, I think another thing that complicates it is that they're seeing me on Facebook.
Yeah.
So, and which is like, Facebook is only my triumph. So it's like, oh yeah, I was just in the Midwest doing shows and all this other shit.
Right.
And like, I just did this festival or whatever. And so they think that I'm a bigger deal than I really am.
Yeah.
And that makes, like, it makes the expectation for, like, how entertaining I'm supposed to be or how I'm supposed to act, it makes me distance myself.
Yeah.
I know. Just,
it gets ratcheted up a little bit.
Well, it's like, oh, I thought you'd be funnier.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm hella not funny.
Yeah,
in real life.
Like, super.
It's like in person, you're just like, no, it's not. It's
no, I'm definitely, I realize that I'm an outlier as far as that goes, because, you know, I hung out with some people. I have a buddy who I've known him. We basically grew up our entire youth together. You know, I've known him since we were fucking infants. Mm-hmm. And
did you grow up around here?
Pretty close, a little bit up north. Like, I was up in Bothell most of the time. That's where I went to high school. But saw him after a while. You know, we kind of separated for a little while. I mean, dude, I'm 31 years old. It's like, you're not going to maintain a good, solid relationship every single one of those years. You know, like, that shit's impossible. So we drifted away for a while, but been hanging out recently. But him and his wife both went to high school with me. And both of them, you know, I was like, you guys hang out with anybody? Like, I actually asked that question. You know, it usually comes up, mm-hmm. and they're like, No, not really. Yeah, not really.
I just went to this party with that a couple. There's a two friends of mine from college are married to each other. They throw these parties every year. They like have really made an effort to keep reaching out to me.
Yeah.
And I have not made a good effort of returning that. And I went to their holiday party, and it was just like I live like 10 blocks away from my friend Sean, who like I haven't seen since college.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was just like, oh, this conversation's so much fun, and we both have no one to hang out with, but we're both not going to contact each other. Like that's just the reality. Is like we're both going to maintain our two busy lives to fit another person in.
Yeah.
And like it, I just saw like a picture of him on Facebook, and I was like, I'm going to like that, but like, is that
right?
Like that? That's
does that work?
Like, yeah, is this enough of a connection to make this real?
It's not nothing. Yeah,
I mean, full circle. I'm just saying, women are better at that. And is that our male privilege? Is
I don't the know if that's not. I can't say that that's true because, like, I mean, the main reason why I can't keep in contact with those people is because I have stand up and a full time job. Like, I was thinking like if like I have stand up full time job, had a girlfriend, had a dog. If I had an Xbox, that dog had to die. Like what, like I can't fit another thing that's going to take me an hour a day.
All know that one couple that where they have the kids, too. Where they have that kid and they're still like you were saying, like that couple still tries to reach out to you. I'm assuming they don't have children yet.
No, they don't.
Yeah. So their thing is probably trying to get the nostalgia of school back. That's my assumption.
Well, they just don't have the wife is a nurse. The husband is an engineer for Boeing. Like they don't have a thing that's like I have a social outlet. I have a way of a thing that's where I'm keeping myself entertained because I'm going and doing stand up every night. And like, this is a thing that I really care about and I'm passionate about. Like, not that to say that they don't like their jobs or that they're not happy.
I know what you're saying.
But like they have other things that like they don't have the thing that I have.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they don't have the social outlet because their job doesn't have, it's not a thing where you're out and about around people. They can become friends with their people they work with if they like their coworkers.
Yeah. But that's such a small pool of people to pick from. Like I've always hung out with my coworkers a little bit, but they've never been my closest friends.
No.
Yeah.
It just doesn't line up like that. You know, you don't just meet somebody from your work and like, oh my God, this person is completely amazing. You know?
And also like at work, there's some decorum that you have to exhibit where like in stand up, the more I'm exposed, maybe the better I am. Yep. So like I've just become like very close with comedians that I respect and that like, and we've gone through like real shit together because we've gone through horrible gigs and like just that gig that we did, Todd Kirkwood, shout out to Todd, by the way. Thanks for having me on that show.
Well, it was okay for me. It had died down by the time you got up.
But it was like a fight. And like, that's an experience that we walk away with together.
Yeah.
Like, that's not like at work, it's just whatever every day. But then some of these shows that we're doing together are horrible and they create a bond between the people that went through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like going through war.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It is. And that's what bothers me when there's, you know, I hear the beef between comedians about some stupid bullshit or it's like you comment. Just, somebody doesn't like your act and so they're just like, or a dick to you, you know, like I get that shit sometimes and it's just like, yeah, it kills it. Cause you're right. I mean, when you do have that bond with other people, like, and you saw somebody, maybe they were struggling or maybe they had an awesome set and they crushed you. You're like, ooh, dude, man, that was a brutal crowd, but you made the best of it. You know, like that's important. You know, those are emotional things that people don't forget easily.
Yeah. And that beef with, like beefing on Facebook is just like
common.
It's an attention grabbing thing. Yes. Like what's the point of, for me, like I always thought this, even before like Seattle had all that drama, starting and it just became like the culture of our comedy scene. Like I would see open micers who were like trying to be funny, like doing goofy dancing, like in the back of the room. And I'm like, why aren't you just getting your attention on stage?
Right.
Like go get everything you need while you're on that stage for 5 minutes, because that's how you're going to get good at this shit.
Right.
And I'm not as interested in like, I've created friends in this, but I've created friends from being funny on stage.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not creating friends from, like, liking a fucking Facebook post or whatever. Like, I'm just trying to be a good comedian. I'm not trying to be, like, I'm not trying to just identify as a comedian so I can hang out with comedians.
Yeah.
I want to be funny on stage. And the people that I've, like, aligned myself with and that have, like, become my closest friends mm-hmm. are also the people that are equally passionate about this thing.
Yeah. Like, that's probably more important, you know, that everybody's kind of working towards the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's all different levels, you know, and everybody's not into it as much as
Yeah, and if you care about it as much as I do, like, you're going to have heartbreaks
yeah.
in this, and you're going to need friends who yeah. can empathize with those heartbreaks because they've also been through it.
Yeah.
Well, like, having comedians who are in different areas, you kind of learn that the beef thing isn't just it's not just a Seattle thing.
Yeah.
It's an entertainment thing where it's like, as much as we're all friends, we're also all kind of competing for that same spot thing. So that little bit of inside.
It's friendly competition.
It should be friendly competition.
You're right. It should be for the most part.
And then
part.
When it turns into the beef, you're like, it's almost like being the child in a divorce. You're like, I don't want to side with anybody. I just want to, can we all just get along? And then you're like, how do you?
Yeah. I've been to all these other scenes and people talk shit about each other, but the difference is that, in all the other scenes, people are smart enough to not do it on the fucking internet. Like, where it's going to stay there and be, and it's in writing. Like, why not just fucking put that on a notepad and then give it to every person you know? Like, that's just as stupid. Yeah. Like, you're giving everyone evidence that you're an asshole.
Well, again,
It'll never go away.
In this social world where you can screenshot stuff, we would hope that that would be something like our politicians would learn as well, but you know, typing stuff is,
yeah,
it's kind of it's an outlet for people, but like you said, they don't realize it's different from a journal.
Yeah. Like, and it's different from just saying it on stage. Like, I'd rather just,
or they're saying it to one person in a conversation and maybe they'll just forget about it and then it'll just go away.
And,
you know?
Yeah. And maybe that's the thing that, like, I need to figure out how to have empathy for is, like, oh, maybe they don't have that one person.
Yeah.
Maybe.
They don't have that circle of confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they got to fucking type it out. Maybe that's something that I need to get to the point where, like, oh, I should feel for this person.
Mm. Yeah.
But
you're right though, man. A lot of times it's just an attention grab. It's just like, hey, how much noise can I make here?
Yeah. It's really hard for me. Like, I think about, like, oh yeah, this person is just like really trying to get attention. And it's hard for me to be like, oh yeah, maybe that person's sad too. Like, it's so hard for me to carry that.
Yep.
Like that's something that, like, kind of led to me and my girlfriend breaking up is, like, she's going through a lot.
Okay.
And, like, she just went through this grad school program, and, like, at the end of the program, she was like, oh, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want this to be my career for the rest of my life.
Oh, man.
And she was also, like, not happy that I was doing
it a couple years ago.
Yeah. But, I mean, I understand. Like, I went through grad school and it was like, oh, I just fucking wasted 2 years. And you don't really, you can't just put your nose down and you're like, all right, I'm just going to fucking get through this. And then, why are you going to grad school?
No, it's nostalgia and it's stressing me out, and I'm getting like sweaty palms because our schooling system isn't such a where you're like, we'll switch it. Well, that's going to be more time and more money, and you're like, well, now at this point, you're like, I might as well grind it through because I'm already this far now, and I'm like, I hate that that's what it does to us, and it's like hearing you say this, I don't know why it's. Lots of empathy is coming from me. That's
okay,
all I'm saying.
Well, thank you. But yeah. I
what are we going to grad school for?
Writing in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Oof.
And it's like, I just wasn't happy. And then it wasn't until I'm glad I went through it because I really found out a lot about myself by being alone in Chicago for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. My girlfriend, ex-girlfriend was going through the same thing. And then I have to keep remembering she's not in a great place for herself.
Mm.
But at the same time, like, that puts a whole lot of stress on another person.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, like, she wasn't happy that I was doing stand-up. I've been doing stand-up for way longer than we've been dating. And I don't know. It's just that in the end, like, we couldn't see ourselves together because I can't be with a person that's not going to be supportive towards my ambitions.
Yeah.
She can't be with a person who's not going to be around.
Right.
The
unavailability.
Yeah. Like, I've been having this conversation with, like, a lot of comedians. One of the most helpful people was Andy Haynes, and just because he's been through like a divorce and he's been through a lot of like, he's also making money off of stand up.
Right.
He's been living off this for years. So I'm like trying to get to where he's at.
Right.
And he's just like, I don't know, man. It's just hard to maintain a real relationship that like, it's kind of being selfish to ask someone, hey, I'm going to be gone when you need me all the
especially
time.
Especially if they're at work all day, you know, and you guys don't get to hang out. And then it's like, oh, you get an hour and a half. And then what, you're going to be gone for 2 hours? Like,
yeah. And like the only thing that they're riding on is the hope that like this is all going to work out and she won't be able to work maybe. She won't have to work at the end, in the end of this. Like, it's not.
I mean, the flip, like you said, the flip is the other end of the spectrum where it's selfish on their end to say, no, your dreams don't follow
them.
Yeah,
with him. Fuck your
dreams.
Stay
here.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now it's like both of you are like fighting because you're like, but don't you see I'm important too? And it's like, yeah, I know, but this is for you. But you're both saying that. And you're like, well, who's going to, in the end, it's just too, it's friggin' the juggernaut and the Hulk. It's just
not going to work out. And I think that's after months of realizing that it's not going to work out, that's when we're like, all right, I think we need to call this quits.
I feel like as a comedian, the best person you can date is a musician.
Why?
They're both hobbies where you're both out, but they're not the same hobbies where you're together.
I just need to be with a person who understands what it's like to have a passion for something.
A musician.
Musician or like an artist or anything that like it takes hard work and that requires you to like do a lot of self-reflection to get better at it.
And I
think that would be ideal, or maybe just a person who was born into money and has nothing to do when I'm free.
Hang out during the day and nights are mine.
We're in a good city for that. We can tell you can find yourself a sugar mama in Seattle. It's plausible.
Well, here's the thing though, man. I mean, you start fresh, you know, you meet somebody new and hey, you know, who knows where it's gonna go. You play by ear. At least now you can make sure to have that conversation when you meet that person. You'd be like, listen, this is important. And you know, if it's not going to work, I'm out 5 nights a week. And you know, if that's not going to work for you, then we don't really have much going here.
Yeah. Yesterday. So I was at my parents' house. My dad got a little drunker than
usual.
I'm used to seeing him. Mm-hmm. But he and I hadn't had the conversation about my ex and I breaking up. And he like, and we're also very distant as a family. Like we're there for each other. Like, but we're not going to figure out, we don't know how to express that.
Yeah.
But my dad was like, because he was drunk, like he was able to express that. And it was like really touching that he was like, you know, this really like, it makes me feel really bad that you have to go through this. And I was like, just like that statement alone is so much more vulnerability and more honesty than we've ever exhibited in like my entire 30 years of existence. And like, and you know, it was to the point where I was just like, I feel bad. Cause I feel like you supported her through grad school and then you weren't and then like the idea was for you to be together and like, you'll get your turn to be supported and it didn't come around for you. And he was also just like, he literally said it like, and my dad doesn't, he's like older Catholic Asian dude where it's just like, doesn't swear. And he's like, this is fucking bullshit that like, you've been doing stand up this entire life. Like, why can't you see that this is your passion and that like, this is something worth investing in.
Right.
And like there's so much in the end, like, the what's going to happen. I was like, kept on having to reassure my dad, like, I'm going to be fine.
Right.
Because I have something to do in the evenings.
Yeah. So, keep your minds off of it.
But it is. It's something to occupy yourself with. You know, the less time you have to just sit and mull and think about all that bullshit, it's like, it just eats you away even more.
Yeah. But the idea that like, I have this freedom now to like be out and do stand up as much as I want. Like, there's so many like shows that happened like back to back that I didn't do. Because I was like, I got to be home by 10.
Yeah. Right.
Like, so I'm just going to go up, do a quick set, and then be home. You know, a lot of that didn't happen over the last 3 years.
Right.
Because because I wanted to be home.
Self-imposed time constraint.
Yeah. But then it got
a little bit of a sacrifice.
Sure. Right. And like, I want to be there for her. But at the same time, like, she wanted me to be there. And so now I don't have any reason to be home.
Right.
Like, I don't have a dog to walk. I don't have any, it's going to be I'm going to have years of freedom where, and that's only going to help me
right.
as a comedian and as a person.
Well, yeah. See, now it's bugging me because I realize now this would have been the best time where she could have been the plus one to come to the shows.
Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, that whole time in grad school, it was done. And I was like, oh, you could have, like your dad was saying, this was the time where you could have got a little bit support. Where she's like, hey, I'll come with you to the show. We can stay out and blah, blah, blah. But then it was like, ah, oh, man, that was like a.
Yeah, but who fucking wants to go to a show like that? I like
depends on the show. Yeah,
we want to go to the show. We do.
I don't want to. I'm not going to watch a show. I'm every comedian is there to waiting for themselves to talk. It's not. I'm not there. Like, oh yeah, I want to go see Aaron talk. Like, I don't care about Aaron's set at all. I'm only caring about Aaron's set because it's something to do until I get to talk.
Yeah. Well, maybe I kind of siding with your girlfriend here a little bit.
Now I see. I get what she is. I mean, I thought it would have been like that would have been a good way for her to have. I mean, I don't know how often that it was given where she would give the effort to show up to the show where you wouldn't have to leave early to go and embrace her time where it could have been like, hey, can I get a little bit of a kickback too?
Yeah. And I think like there were like towards the end of the relationship, I was like, well, let's try to do something together. And that's like, that's very similar to, it's not stand up because my girlfriend's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
She's very funny, very intelligent. Like, all the pieces were there for like a very successful relationship other than the fact that we have different ideals of what our lives are going to be. And so so I was like, well, why don't like, you're so fucking funny. Let's take an improv class together. Like, let's do something like smart. That. Like,
a hobby.
Yeah, let's create a hobby together. But she, like I said, she's, like, in a bad place and, like, not, I don't know.
You think it was seasonal affective disorder, like Berg?
I'm sure that had a little bit to do with it.
Never helps.
Vitamin D.
Do you get that?
It depends on the weather. And, like, sometimes if I don't have to work and, you know, if I don't go out to shows, I just sit here and I'm just hanging out and I kind of start to get stir crazy.
Needs a dog.
But that would probably help. That would definitely help.
Just fucking do a show.
Yeah, I know. Well, a lot of times it's like Friday and Saturday nights, though. You know, it's like. But yeah, you're right. I could at least go to a show. I could go down to Laughs and, you know.
Or go to a Scratch and do an open mic. Yeah. There's a lot of like. The shittiest open mic is still a chance for you to like feel accomplished for the evening.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good way to look at it.
A little bit of a checkbox.
Yeah, especially if it's like a shitty crowd and you actually get something good out of them. You're like,
Yeah, okay. Or like you show up to a shitty open mic where like it's like seven comedians just in the audience and you're like, well, I always like I was at Scratch on. The 23rd.
I've not been back there in so long.
And I was just like, oh, it's just comedians, but all right, let's figure out how to say something else. Mm-hmm. Like they've all heard the stuff I've been working on.
Yeah.
So let's do something new. And I just filled 10 minutes of like saying something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
fine.
It got my mind off of things.
Yeah. I got to speak my voice.
Yeah. And it's better than just sitting at home for me. Like for me personally, like, and I know I'm running away from a lot of problems that I'm going through, but like that's,
aren't we all?
It's helpful.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. And yeah, I just got to be on it a little more, but that's the only time. It's only like a week or two, a year or two. I feel like just
how often are you getting up?
Last couple of weeks I've been getting to like 3 to 5 shows a week. So yeah.
What about you, Marcus?
Not too bad.
Not enough.
He's been slacking big time recently. Slacking.
Yeah. I've been too insightful because I'm too. I do the sitting at home and sulking, and then I beat myself down, and then I don't go.
I did a lot of that.
Does a very good job.
I mean, and I know that I'm saying this from like a place of privilege in comedy because I was saying when I was
finally
in Chicago.
Somebody else admits it.
What was that?
Finally, somebody else admits it.
Some privilege.
Well, in Chicago, I definitely had what you were going through, Marcus, where I was like, ugh, I'm just sulking and I'm going to go up once every, like, maybe
blue moon.
2 to 3 times a month.
Oh, this is my 2016 sucked ass. And it all happened. I've moved 3 times this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, this, now that I had to, Mike Collette is back in town and Yogi Polywall was at the Underground and they came up to me and they're like, how does it feel to, like, get up automatically at all the clubs that you're fighting to get up at? And I was like, I didn't even realize that was
happening.
I forgot that like I've been fighting for that and like it was such a slow transition that like, oh yeah, I should appreciate this while I've got it. like, I can get up here any Monday and then come back any Tuesday. Like, but yeah, and that's what I mean by, like, I have this privilege where, like, I feel accepted every time I go out. And I feel a little bit desired every time I go out.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of a confidence boost.
Yeah.
It helps. But especially if we have low self-esteem being a comedian like
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because, like you said, you got to fight for that for a while. And, you know, sometimes you don't even realize when the transition is happening. I mean, obviously, nobody notifies you. Hey, so just so you know. But, yeah, and that makes it tough going out, you know, especially if you're like, hey, I'm going to go. But, God, I might not even... I might get on the fucking list, you know? Like, geez, I'm going to drive my ass down there. So,
but that's a part of it. And that's you know, I have to remember that this is rewarding, right? That I'm in like a rewarding period of my life. But like, that's what makes it rewarding is like, oh, fuck, I did this. Like, I made all these friends the right way from being funny on stage. I made like, I got to this point where I get to be on stage any night.
Yeah.
From doing it the right way and from being funny on stage. Like, I didn't kiss anyone's ass or like anything to get here.
How many years have you been stand up? Like six?
Yeah, six. About six years. I started like right around this time of year too.
Okay.
The holidays? Interesting.
Yeah.
That's good. So you got in early 20s. I think that's like the best time.
I was like 20. Yeah, I was 24.
Yeah.
That's a good time. When I started. So 30 now. Yeah,
that's what it takes. Unfortunately, man, like I'm on year number three here, and I'm definitely picking up momentum, but it's still a fucking dogfight, you know. A lot of times, so
that was a lot of work to put in. Like, do you think it'd be different if you were a woman
doing stand up?
Yeah,
I think it would be a little different. I think so. Here's what I like. My honest feelings about this is that, yes, it is tougher to be a woman in stand-up. There's no doubt about that. I think, but the reluctance to get a laugh, like, let's say you're, some woman is going on stage at the Comedy Underground, the reluctance to get a laugh that the audience is going to give her, I get that same thing as an Asian man, because there's no expectation for an Asian guy that looks like me to be funny.
Right.
Like, no one's going to see me and go, oh, that dude's going to fucking be hilarious.
Right.
And I think the same thing happens with women, where they're like, oh, like, it's just any woman is going to go on stage and like, there's going to be a percentage of the audience that's going to roll their eyes at this before she even says anything.
That only happens for me if they say anything about their genitals.
But at the same time, like,
so is that lowering the bar or is that raising it? Do you think
it changes it?
I'm just saying that, like, there's a lot of complaints about, like, how, oh, like, this place sucks because they're misogynistic. The place also sucks because they are racist towards Asians in comedy, but that's what makes you better.
Yeah, but is it the place or is it the audience?
Well, the audience. Sure. Right. But the place garners a certain audience.
I know.
But that's what makes you better, is that no one was fucking, like, no one expected me to be funny. So I fucking threw that in their face and was funny. And, like, you rise to the occasion if it's harder for you.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's, not to be too, like, Seattle specific, but, like, people need to get out of the comedy room or comedy nest or whatever and really go to the rooms that suck. Like, because that's the rooms that, like, are thinking that you're not going to be funny. You got to go there.
Right. You got to prove them wrong.
And prove them wrong, because that's how you get way funnier.
Yeah. And prove yourself wrong too, you know, because you're like, oh, I don't do good there. It's not a good spot, but it's like, well, you said, you get that boost even more when you can make something happen there. And It just makes you a better all around comedian. You know, you can't just be crushing it with one specific type of room.
Yeah.
You know, you got to make sure you're doing good with all different kinds of rooms.
And that also will lead you astray as a comedian. Like, one of my best friends is down in Portland, and, like, he's kind of weird as a comedian.
Carrot Top?
But he's not standard as, like, a setup joke. Like, punch, like, I don't know. His name's Milan Patel.
Oh, no, I was just naming off, like, comedians that aren't known for, like, being standard.
I was just like, is he gonna keep going with this?
I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, I probably was.
Do I have to just name him?
But
I think that, like, Portland has celebrated his weirdness a little too much, and he's gotten weirder and weirder. Where I was like, he needs to go somewhere where he's going to get beat down a little and someone, I think he's hilarious, but I'm a comedian and I see through it all. Like, he doesn't have the connecting to a standard audience, a club audience that he should. So if he puts himself in, like, I keep telling him, move to Seattle, move somewhere. I don't, just not in Portland.
He can
because
just travel.
Because, like, being in Portland is really making him, it's like sending him in this trajectory that's too far off.
Yeah.
No. Like, he's going to start smashing.
Just get into an echo chamber, yeah, too, you know.
And that happens with the other end where it's like you become like this, like, too clubby and too, like, you can feel, like, the road on a comedian where I'm like, ugh, this, like, you're too, like, accessible. Like, like, the things you're saying, like, really have no depth to them.
There's no basis. It's just, yeah, a stupid statement. Yeah.
You're not trying anything, yeah, new or anything crazy.
And so that happens on both ends where you're just like, oh, this, you know, and I'm trying to balance something between the hipsters and the clubs.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, how did the Midwest go? Because when I went to Kansas City, the two black clubs I went to, the first one I went to, I bombed because I was like, all right, those jokes don't work here.
Uh-huh.
And I went to a black club the next day and I was like, all right, I'll just adjust these ones. And it went better. And I was like, all right, that's fine.
Yeah. The Midwest, like, was fine. Yeah. You know, I went out with Andy Haynes, and he was like, really, like, I'm really thankful for him, like, bringing me out. And he's like asking me to come out again. So it's like, super excited for, like, this working partnership, on top of the, like, this real friendship that we're developing.
Yeah.
But there are, like, moments where, like, Chicago was fine. You know, it's what you expected. Everything was fine and fun. And there were a couple shows where I didn't do that well. Like, we had to do this college gig. And I don't do very well in front of 18-year-olds because, what have they done with their lives? Like, they just moved out of their parents' right. house in August.
Yeah. Right.
So it's like, I'm talking about things that, like,
they haven't happened they yet. Have no idea what the real
they
world
might
is
have
like
seen it yet. On a YouTube thing because they don't watch TV anymore.
But at the same time, Andy Haynes crushed it in front of them, you know, but that's because he figured out how to have fun with them by watching my set. Like, and then, there were actually some shows where I did great and Andy, like, had a rough time, but that's because Andy went and did political stuff on stage in, like, Austin Town, Ohio was one of the places that we went, and it's, like, very red. But it's right next to Youngstown, Ohio, purple. Where we thought it was, where Youngstown is very blue and historically blue.
Yeah.
But, so Andy was just like, all right, let's do some political stuff after, but what I did as his opener was like, oh, I'm not gonna turn off the crowd by going into politics. So I was like going through my set list, and this might be something that, I don't know if you can relate to this, Marcus, but I was going through my set list and I was like, okay, we're not gonna do like those three jokes because they're too like political, too like much opinion is being expressed in that. So I didn't do like those three jokes. Everything else was like, you know, honest and whatever. Yeah. They liked me a lot. And then I get off stage, I see Andy set, and I'm like, oh, did I sell out by not doing those three jokes? Like, did I Uncle Tom too much for them? Because,
God damn it.
Like, that was a real feeling where I was like, oh, like,
little
maybe
black boy
I shouldn't.
Sambo.
But, I was just like, maybe I shouldn't have had them like me. Like, and
right.
But, yeah. I don't know. In the end, I think it was fine because I got 30 to 50 people who, like, probably have never met a Filipino person. I got them to like a Filipino person.
Right, you're like, all right.
And that's some progress. Like, you know, I think about stand-up as, it is a form of activism.
Yes.
So I'm just like, how do I keep moving things forward and how do I stay on the right side of history?
Yep.
Make sure that there's progress through every set that I do.
Yeah. Well, like you made a good point. You know, every time you go out, like there's an opportunity to create some kind of success from that, you know, even if it's small, even if it's just one joke, you nailed the punchline and it went over well. I mean, it's a small victory, you know?
Yeah.
And the more of those you add up as the week goes, the better and better and the more progress you're going to see from your weeks at that point.
Yeah. And there's like, and I was saying this to my dad yesterday cause he was getting like, I've never, when he, you know, when he was in his drunken conversation with me, I didn't know how supportive my parents were for me. They've seen a few shows of mine, but like, I think it's important that like I'm an Asian guy doing comedy.
Right.
There isn't a lot of us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is important that I get to be like a different because I'm not what they're gonna expect from an Asian guy.
Right.
Like, I think there are certain comedians like that are Asian or that are even black guys where you're like, oh, you're exactly what I was thinking was going to come out of your mouth.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But I'm not a stereotype. Yeah. And I think it's important. Like, every set that I do is a form of pushing the dial forward.
Right.
Yeah.
And progress.
Mind opening.
Yeah. Because I'm not going to be what you expect.
Right.
Ever. Yeah. And I'm going to break down stereotypes just by being in the public.
Yeah. That's kind of nice. It's built in inherent for you too. Yeah. But you almost have the element of surprise already on your side when you walk on stage.
Yes.
You know?
But and it just comes, like, it just took, you know, a few years of figuring out how to overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
To go back to, like, this thing with, like, you know, it's harder for me in the beginning, but now I'm better at it, and mm-hmm. I have this thing that, like, it's fun and easy, and it feels important.
Yeah.
Lots of practice.
Like, for me personally, too, I feel like, you know, bearded, somewhat angry white guy, that's a pretty common, pretty well-filled you know, niche in our comedy scene around here. So it's like, there is times where people, like, they're expecting a certain particular thing from you. Like,
yeah,
oh, here's this fucking guy. You know?
Yeah. And this is something that I was, like, trying to explain to my girlfriend, like, why stand-up is important for me is because she is having, like, her own realizations about, like, feminism and stuff. And something happened to her recently where she was like, I think it was like some job related thing. She's like, I'm not excited to be a woman in this situation.
Oh.
And I explained to her, I've never been excited to be Filipino in my life until I did stand up.
Right.
Because stand up makes me unique. Fact that I'm Filipino makes me unique. Yeah. It gives me a different sense of perspective.
Yeah.
I was raised this way and no one is going on stage talking about this shit that I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's like that's what, if like anyone's going to get me to stop doing stand up, like, fuck you. Because, right, this thing made me like myself, like that, and that's never happened. Like, there's no one that's in the world that's gonna go, "Oh, you're great because you're Filipino." Like, that's gonna come off as racist, and also it's just and condescending. Yeah. But like, now I actually feel that,
right?
And I'm like proud of like my lineage and my family, and like,
yeah, and your heritage just played something into that, you know?
Yeah, and it's made me an important person to myself.
Yeah,
right.
And like that's something that, like, it's just, she can't put that all together.
I thought you were gonna say something about her not getting paid the same or something.
No, well, eventually, in a couple of weeks, if she gets a job, she's gonna be getting paid way more than me.
Yeah, I know, but
yeah, she'll probably hate it and want to kill herself. But see, that's the thing. That's why I can never go that route with school. It's just no chance, because I don't think I could make that big of a commitment for like a 6-7 year process,
mm-hmm.
and like think that I actually made the right choice the entire time and not want to, you know, fucking give up halfway through. Like, I don't have that in me. I couldn't stick through it that much. I mean, comedy is hopefully going to be one of the first things for me that I actually do stick with it, even when maybe it's not going good all the time and mm-hmm. things aren't going the way I want, you know, but I can see that it's a long process. It's a 6-8 year process, even before you start seeing any kind of results, really, you know, anything to kind of get excited about.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know how to, comedy is the first thing that I've like failed at and been like, let's keep doing this though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think that it's definitely taught me a lot of resilience.
Yeah.
And like instilled a lot of like a lot of positive things in my life. And like, I've started to like focus on how to become a better person. I mean, kind of for comedy, because if I'm a better person, then I'm a better person on stage.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. It's important. I think it's important, at least to me.
Yeah.
And like the fact that like we're willing to fight for it is great. Like, what do you think? What are your goals? Do you have goals at the end of this?
I do. Yeah. You know, I got a couple different things going on right now that I'm kind of hoping can all roll into something the same. You know, I'm kind of trying to connect the dots a little bit. I got the podcast going on here. It's mm-hmm. great. I get to talk to cool comedians like you, get some insight, you know, on stuff I've never thought of. The stand up, you know, I'm trying to build the momentum on that too. I don't know. I don't know exactly where it's all going to take me, but like I said, I'm at this point, I certainly thought I was going to be a lot further when I was going to be 3 years in. I thought, okay, I'm going to have this shit figured out. 3 years, come on, I can figure this out. The first year, you know, you slack, you go once a week, maybe, you know, maybe not even that much. And then, you know, it kind of, it builds up, but I've just told myself that this is, again, this is going to be like a 6 to 8 year process. Mm-hmm. And if at that point I'm not seeing any progress, seeing any results, you know, then there's going to have to be a reevaluation. But until then, this is what I'm doing, you know, and this is, and again, like you said, it's good for me. It's fun. You know, when I have a good set and things go well and people are like, hey, nice job, man. Nice job. Yeah. You know, and they laugh just because you were fucking making fun of animals and squirrels and shit, you know, mm-hmm. and they laugh at that. Like you feel good about that. You know, you're contributing something to, if nothing else, somebody's enjoyment and them forgetting about all that bullshit like you're talking about that's going on in their lives. And they just want to have a couple good laughs and enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. So...
Well, if you're looking at me, my answer is I just want to rebuild my confidence to be able to attend the comedy stuff to get wealthy enough to then try to kill myself in a Porsche accident just like Paul Walker.
You can just get a Porsche.
No, I can't. Yeah. I can't get a Porsche.
If you're going to wreck it, you know?
If you're just going to wreck it and die, then fucking
just give him, get a good... Collateral everything you got.
Yeah, get some good credit.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's not.
You don't. You think comedy is the one that's what's going to get you
put
money?
No.
I want to be the 2000. I want my death to be 2016 worthy. You know, I just want people to be like, oh, he was a good guy. I'm sad to see him go. That's all I'm hoping for. I want a legacy of death that happens where it was out of the blue.
You're not going to be the prince of comedy.
I don't want to be the prince. I want to be the Abe Vigoda of comedy. That's all I want.
Vigoda. Oh, there's a poll right there.
Yeah. Oh, he's one of the people that died too.
Yeah, I think when I was 3 years in, my goal, it's a goal that's always been there, is like, I need to figure out how to have more fun on stage.
Improv.
So it's a constant like carrot in front of the horse, or mm-hmm. What's the phrase? Is there a phrase?
Yeah, carrot in front of the
carrot on the stick.
Yeah.
But so that's constant, where it's like, oh, I need to have more fun on stage and watching other comedians that are better than me. So it's like, mm-hmm. oh, look at that avenue of fun that he went down or she went down. But now I'm like trying to figure out what concrete goals are. I think I'm going to move to LA sometime. So like now I have goals, things that I need to accomplish before I get to LA.
Yeah.
Like I need to write a script that's worth the damn. I need to figure out how to get more Twitter followers even.
Yeah. Just you got to do those intermediary things.
Lathe told us there's those Twitter back or follow back.
Oh yeah.
Accounts. Well, they will give people the thing. You can also boost your account. Like I know how to do it. I don't.
Yeah. I'm trying to do it like just by
being funny,
constantly writing a joke. And that's like
bringing up good stuff. That's the most legitimate way to do it.
Yeah. And that's how you get followers that are going to interact.
Right.
Not just followers. Cause like there's this guy that I know in LA that has like 130,000 followers and gets like 16 likes. I'm like,
How
like those have to be fucking bots.
Do you ever look at the posts? I've noticed a lot of people who on Twitter, because like I said, it's one of the few things where there's nudity allowed, and also your opinions can be whatever the hell, because it's just you posting, and the only people that can see it, or if they're following you, is the people that kind of get a little bit pokey. They make comments that aren't very. Like, I don't know if it, and then people get mad at you, and then you have people following this argument that you have, and then you're like, oh, that guy's kind of on my side about an opinion, and you're like, all right, they might be okay to follow, and then they'll check your timeline to see.
I don't do much interacting.
No, not interacting. I'm talking about the people that follow. Usually it's because of you interacting on a post, or you making a comment, or if you see what's the top trending tweet thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a comment on that thing. If it says like make up a song thing, I'll just be like, all right, like
Yeah, I don't really fuck with that
oh,
much.
That helps because it puts you up on that list of things.
What I do is I'll like, I'll just read my Twitter feed and I'll be like, oh, that yesterday George Michael died, and then I was like, all right, here's a thing in the news. I can make a joke about it.
Yeah,
like
right.
Or here's a thing that I'm feeling. Let's make a joke about it. Like I just wanted to come off as my comedy.
Well, no, you could still do your comedy, but I mean, like, if you see a top trending tweet is Richard Jefferson just dunked on what's his face, you could just be like,
oh yeah, yeah. And I just like don't. It's that thing that I was saying, like, where I'm not gonna open a second account. Like, I'm not even gonna fucking click on a thing. Yeah. Like, I'm just gonna look at, like, read three tweets and go, all right, I've got a take, or I don't. Right. Most of the time, I don't.
Right. Oh, well, that's the easiest way to get followers is to use the top trend and hashtag it into your post if you can make a joke out of what they're talking about, because you'll put you up on that list.
Something
of
about hashtags like makes me, it's like cringy, off-putting to me.
It's super gross.
You're reaching. You're definitely reaching.
But sometimes the top trending tweet thing is kind of fun. Like it was the other one was like make a Christmas song into a it was like a sex thing or something like that. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, Santa Claus got ran over by a reindeer or something. This isn't what it was.
That's a real song.
Right, but it was like it's not made up. But no, it was 20. I said Santa got ran over by a reindeer and didn't wake up, 2016 remix. And like that got a bunch of people going. I was like, all right, see, like that's, it's just something where you're like, all right, just something stupid where you're like, I don't know, like Twitter's, I like it because it kind of gets your words out and you have to learn how to condense what you're saying. Uh-huh. So that's why I like it.
Yeah, for me, like in terms of like comedy, those rarely make it to the stage, and that's what I care most about is like, if it's gonna make it to the stage and be something that I give a shit, because it's so hard to do a joke that you care about over and over, like 5 nights a week.
Yeah,
you know,
at a certain point you hate it.
I've never within the last like couple years, I don't think I've written a joke that I've like where I felt confident. Like, because I've written so many jokes and been like, that dumb idea came out of me. There's no way it's great. It's the same thing as like the girls that want to have sex with me. I'm like, that girl, like, this came out of my dumb brain. Yeah. Like, no way is this genius. And then like, it turns out like that's my best joke all of a sudden.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing is like, you come out with one that you think is like good. You're like, oh, this is going to be fucking good. And then you get nothing from it. Yeah. You're like, oh, your confidence is just completely shaken. And so at that point, you're going into a lot of them and you're just saying, oh boy, this get in poorly. And then you do it and you time it pretty well. And actually it turns out better than you think.
Yeah. You just go up there and you're like, I don't know what this is going to be like. Cause that's what it's like to show up to work, I guess, is just being like, I don't know. I'm just going to say something new and hopefully my life
you have
changes.
To. I mean, I see these people that, you know, I've been doing stand-up with them now for like 2 or 3 years. And it's like, for the most part, they're still doing the same 5-6 minutes. It's like, dude, you gotta get yourself out there and take a shot, take a swing at something here. Like you don't have the credentials that you're going to just skate by on that, you know, maybe tight 10 minutes that you've had for 3 years now.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta come up with more shit here.
It just like the fact that like I went on stage on last Friday and just like hadn't said any of this stuff before. Let's talk about how this relationship's ending. And then like, not all of it, most of it was garbage. I haven't even listened to the set, cause I'm like, I'm feeling like I'm going to be cringing a lot, but
that's tough.
But at the same time, like, so what? I bombed. Like, there's a skill in bombing and learning how to bomb and take that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And learning how to like react to a joke that wasn't,
that didn't hit.
That didn't
Buzz Lightyear said it the best. It's not flying, it's falling with style.
Yeah. And that's, there's a skill to that.
Yeah.
Like there are sets where I'm flying, but like there's a lot of falling and looking confident while I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
And come back to actually what you were saying, you know, about having fun on stage. I think that's a really good point, because I think confidence is a huge part of comedy. I don't think it's even talked about that much, but I think it is definitely important. People can see the confidence in you when you're on stage after you have it. Mm-hmm. And because they see the confidence in you, they are therefore more confident in your abilities, and you know they're more willing to go there with you.
I was trying to,
and I think if you're having fun, if you're having fun, I think it definitely makes you look a lot more confident. You know, and the two are, they're not mutually exclusive. You know.
Well, I was explaining this. I was talking with, I don't recall who I was talking with, but it was someone like who's been doing stand up for the same amount of time as me, and they're like, I just wish that I could just do open mics, and I was like, no, fucking open mics, the bar is so low, because you've got so many people who like are just going up there for like the first time, and they go up there and you can hear the shakiness in their voice, or like the way that they take out the mic is weird. And for me, like, that bar is so low that like I get on stage and I pull out the mic and move the mic stand with enough confidence, people are like, okay, this guy's a real guy. And it changed. It's just too easy to do an open mic. That's what, like, weekends at clubs can suck, because people showed up with high expectations.
They paid money.
And also they're not really, comedy fans, so like what they've seen, like you know, Bill Burr's thing on Netflix, like they're expecting Bill Burr. Yeah. Like, I'm not gonna be that. So
who's the Bill Burr of the Filipinos, would you say? Is there anybody even close?
The most successful Filipino comedian would be, I think, Rex Navarrete, who's out of San Francisco, but he like does like jokes for Filipinos. Mm. I don't know how he works his shit out, because he's just like, all of his shit is like specifically, like some of it's in Tagalog, like, and it's specifically for Filipino audiences. Okay. And I'm like, I don't know how the fuck you. What open mic did you go to?
How'd you hammer this down?
Yeah.
It's just family events.
At the Filipino sandwich shop.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, you know, this has been a good conversation. You got a little bit of heart out here coming up pretty soon. So, we'll kind of get at this and wrap it up here. This is going to be our last episode of 2016 though. And you know, we already touched base on it a little bit, but let's do a little, look back. We already looked back on some of the names, but what do you guys think changed during this year? What was the biggest surprise?
Oh,
Trump won the fucking election.
Trump won. That was huge. Yeah.
You can't win a sporting series if you're up 3-1.
Oh, you're talking about, yeah, that's true. The NBA Finals
and
the World Series too. Yeah, two of them.
I think you can't. Yeah, you just can't expect to win.
You can't expect to win if you think.
I thought Hillary was up 3-1.
Dude, the odds said she was.
Yeah.
There were some articles I was seeing that Trump had like an 8% or 9% chance of winning. Like, wow, how far off were you? You were off.
But
about,
I think that's what
points.
Like, I think a lot of people, how far off is the war? Like, especially liberals, like, we need to really reconsider, like, how far off we are.
Well,
you guys got very left.
Yeah, we all were fucking Steph Curry's, thinking like everything's gonna be fine. And
I feel like it's just a lot of, I wish more people were like, I feel like comedians, you can't be right or left. You kind of have to try and straddle the line.
Yeah.
And I wish more people would think like that, but they can't because fake news.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you gotta move and I, like, you know, I work in education, so I can't teach calculus to fourth graders.
Right.
You gotta figure out where the fourth graders are at. And I'm not saying that, I'm not equating Republicans to fourth graders, but like, I have to like meet these people where they're at to push them where I'm at.
Well, you're already in Ohio. You already met a couple of them, right?
Yeah. But at the same time, like, you know, that's just going
to
be.
Yeah. Well, and there's people that, you know, they go to the Jai Tai and all those places, and you know, all their stuff is just far, far left. And it's like, this is so extreme. You're just like pandering almost to the audience at this point. You know, it's like, we don't.
Yeah. If you say cisgendered on stage, I'm like, fuck this. Like,
unless you mean it in an ironic or sarcastic way.
From it,
Yeah. Because you're going to say that shit, and then like, oh, that's going to work in like 3 rooms in Seattle and like 4 rooms in Portland. And then good luck with this career that you're trying to start.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, there's got to be some diversity. You got to be able to hit everybody with a little something.
And I think that's what 2016 has taught me. Uh-huh. Is like, I need to figure out how to be a little bit more accessible to people that have never, like, that's not in my bubble.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that are just like, oh, there's an Asian guy doing this. Like, he's saying stuff about race. Like, I'm going to ride with this. And it's all white people that are on my side.
Yeah.
But I need to quit working off of white guilt and work with other white people.
See, I hate white guilt because of Twitter, because I had so many people on my Twitter account that were just like, oh, and I'm like, stop being, shut up. Like, I just don't like it. But I also have family in the South, and I grew up a little bit in the South. So I always kind of like, when I saw it, it bugs me, because I was like, no, just say it. You know which words don't say, because, you know, the black fist will just come out of nowhere and punch you. But at the same time, like, make your say. But if you're wrong, just know that I'm going to come back with a response to answer it. But I won't yell at you. I'm just going to try to talk it out with you. It's usually my go. And I feel like a lot of people here, where there are certain words where it becomes a word of aggression, where it's like, I'm being oppressed by the words. And now I think it's funny that it's kind of flipped.
Well, it's like, we need to realize that, like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to be oppressed by your words, because I might be oppressed by our government.
Right.
So,
exactly. Yeah. So
it's like, if you can get offended that easily and upset by words, you're a weak person. All right. Yeah, and don't come to a fucking comedy show.
And at the same time, like, I think like it is fair to say that like I've never been raped or any, I've never been in a situation where like any word has, there's no word that's going to offend me.
Well, I was going to say like, used in anger.
I don't even have an N word that's really good for me. Yeah. Like, so no matter what, like there's nothing that's going to, maybe it's the fact we can go back to the word privilege. Maybe this is a privilege that I've developed this resiliency, but like at the same time, like, I don't know, like maybe I think America needs to develop some resiliency, especially seriously. Liberals.
Yeah.
If we're going to like, we just fucking elected a cabinet of like racists. Like this Breitbart shit is our cabinet now. And so
he's had some good speeches though, man. He'll talk about some issues that nobody else is willing to address. Like,
you talking about Trump?
No, I'm talking about Bannon. He'll talk about stuff like the national debt, which nobody else wants to talk about. But the fact that, you know, we're pretty much at a point where if we don't change course with that, that it's going to be an unsolvable problem, you know? And I don't know. You need to, I mean, like you said, you need people kind of coming from those sides that we're not used to, you know?
Yeah.
We need some ideas from everybody, you know? Nobody's got it all figured out. Nobody's got a monopoly and all the good ideas. No liberals, no conservatives, nobody. We need to be able to have a conversation,
yeah,
and not call people bigots and not call people racist and actually discuss. And it, you know, maybe we need to make people know that climate change is a real thing by having a legitimate conversation and bringing up some of the facts that the people who think it's a guarantee
the weather
don't
cycle?
Want to bring up.
Yeah, yeah. It's just figuring out how to actually hold discourse instead of fucking Facebook arguing. Mm-hmm. Like that shit's not going to lead to shit.
No. No one ever changed their mind because of what somebody posted. Like, oh, no, I didn't think of it that way.
I have had moments where people were like, you are an asshole.
Yeah.
And I've like, yep. 3 months later, I'm like, oh, I was an asshole. Like, but that takes a long fucking time, you know? And all of this is going to take a long time. It turns out 2016 showed us that America is a lot uglier than we are. Than we thought we were.
It is. But, you know, we're the ugliest in a bar full of pigs, though, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's not too much better looking out there.
We send a lot of people south. We're not as fat as we used to be.
Yeah, not for a long time, but... All right, well, yeah, we're pretty much here on time, so I think that's a good way to wrap it. You know, we can get that later. At least, though, 2016, I think everybody is coming in to the new year with a little bit of hope, at least, you know?
Yeah, we're
I mean, we've been here before. We've certainly been here before, you know, so it doesn't mean anything's going to be actually different, but we'll see, you know? It was a rough one. We got through it, though, and sometimes, you know, it flips. You have a good year, bad year, good year, bad year, you know? It's just the way it goes, so.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you're dealing with the whole, your whole situation pretty well, and I think you've done a good job of identifying the positive that will come out of this, and I think you're going to probably hone in on that and definitely focus on it. So
I'm very enthusiastic for 2017. I think I might have a good year.
There's about the most confidence you're going to get out of Wilfred. There's a chance that this could go okay. All right, well, yeah, we're going to wrap it here, you guys. We got to get this guy out of here, but thank you guys for listening to another episode of An Earful in the Emerald City. Episode number 60, you guys. Coming into the new year, you know, I've told you before, we're not big on resolutions. Just let's all try to be better people this year, huh? Just a better all-around people in 2017. Just be decent human beings again, and we'll be all right. You know, as long as everybody doesn't treat each other like a piece of shit, and we can get along, we'll be okay, guys. You know, we'll get through this stuff.
Yeah, 2016, stay alive.
Stay alive. Yeah, just make it through. Celebrities, don't go outside if you're anybody famous. Morgan Freeman, all right? Just stay in your home for the
Eat
next few days here.
Eat vegetables for a week.
Yeah, exactly. Don't drink. Nothing crazy. Don't go up. Don't even go up and down the stairs, all right? Nothing. But
don't do any surgeries.
No, nothing like that. Thank you guys, though, for joining us for another episode of An Earful in the Emerald City. Hit us up on Twitter, you guys, @ Earful in E City, or if you guys got anything you want to talk about, maybe some predictions for what's going to happen for 2017. Yeah, we'll do that next show because we got time, you know, it's the first week, but
I feel like I have to flip the ball
Emerald City Podcast at gmail.com. Hit us up there too, you guys.
Hit me up on Twitter too.
Yeah, what's you got a plug? You got anything going on this weekend or anything?
I've got a show. Ballard Comedy Hour is going to be happening every third Wednesday of the month.
Okay.
And that's going to be starting January 18th. And then just hit me on Twitter at Wilfred Padua, WILFREDPADUA.
Wilfred Padua, you guys, if you haven't seen him, get out there and see. He's one of the best guys we got touring around the city here locally. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Marcus. Thank you guys for joining us. And hey, do us a favor again, if you guys enjoyed it, maybe tell a friend, you know, just say it's a late Christmas gift for you. All right. You know, we're a little kooky, we're a little crazy, but we're going to keep it going, guys. Thank you for joining us again. Earful in Emerald City. I'm Aaron Berg Slim with my man Marcus Netters and Wilfred Padua. And we're going to talk to you guys next year. See you, folks.
Salute.